Hi, I'm Matt Gibbs. I'm the managing editor of Improper Books, and you're listening to The Geek Show.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to 4Panel, The Geek Show's dedicated comic book, manga, and various other things podcast. You know, we let our imaginations run wild and free here because that's what they're for.
They also taste much better when eaten.
Yes.
Because we allow them to roam free.
Yes. Free range imagination. That's what we have here. My name's Rob, and joining me today is the ever so wonderful Andrew.
No, not a refuse.
You don't want to be ever so wonderful.
Yes. I want to be 70% wonderful.
Oh. So can I call you all the fun of the fair, Andrew, then?
Yes. Why not? I mean, it sounds slightly dirty, but why not?
Right. So,
I think it's probably because it's just the fair, therefore carnies.
Yeah.
Therefore, it's a bit seedy and very sinister.
Which, ironically enough, Andrew, given your supervillain status.
That's true. although, it's less supervillain, more guy waiting behind the back of the toilets. Let's go behind the bike sheds to meet all the fun of the fair, Andrew.
You and your roustabouts.
See, I think you said roustabouts, but I'm going to assume you said raster mouse.
No, I said roustabouts.
No, shush, I have a tiny army of raster mice.
Okay. We've gone way off topic, but let's bring it back with a bit of blurb. Obviously, 4Panel is part of the Geek Show podcast network. We like what we do. If you like what we do, then show your support, buy one of our lovely bits of merchandise from our shop, which is on our website, thegeekshow.co.uk, or you can make a donation using the button on the right-hand side of the website. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, or just email us, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. And all of our shows are available on iTunes, very soon Audio Boom, and YouTube, and Mixcloud. So, you know, do check us out.
A cracking bit of blurbage onto the news.
Yes.
So, I'll be starting us off this week for an exciting change.
Okay.
With what's probably the big news of the week, or actually, yeah, for once it has been exactly a week since we've been off air.
Yes, it has.
And in that time, we finally have a freaking cable announcement for Deadpool 2, after basically every single white, brown-haired, vaguely middle-aged actor on the planet was cast as him.
Including Kurt Russell.
Potentially cast.
Including Kurt Russell.
God damn it, Rob.
What?
Now, whatever I say isn't going to be worth it, is it? Because it's not Kurt Russell.
I know. Because Cable, Kurt Russell, it kind of works, doesn't it?
I want to believe that they initially did, but then they said, okay, Kurt, now it's time to trim that beard. And he just stormed off set.
No, he put both hands on the beard and said, no, you'll never touch my beard. You can take You can take my life, but you'll never take my facial hair.
Josh Brolin. It's Josh Brolin.
Is it Josh Brolin?
Josh Brolin is the guy who's playing Cable.
Okay. Sorry, that was my Kurt Russell Braveheart bit.
It's Kurt Russell as Mel Gibson as Braveheart.
Yes.
That would be an accent.
So Josh Brolin, remind me, what's he been in again? His name sounds familiar.
He's been in a bunch of stuff. He was in No Country for Old Men.
Okay, yeah.
As the guy what was on the run.
Yeah, I remember now.
Yeah, God, he's one of those guys. Well, I know he's been in a lot, but I'm struggling to think of Men in Black 3. Was in Men in Black 3.
What, was he the one who played the young K?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I remember him now.
Also, weirdly enough, he's the guy who voices Thanos in the Marvel films.
So the biggest bad guy in Marvel at the moment, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, is going to play Cable.
The biggest, well, most B-list hero, yep.
Okay.
I remember him now.
I remember Josh Brolin. I know why I remember the name. He plays Brand in The Goonies.
Did he?
Yeah, that was his first film role, was in The Goonies. He played the older brother Brand.
That is weird.
Yeah, that's why I remember the name. I was thinking, that name sounds so familiar. Why do I know it?
I mean, to be fair, I guess that proves that he's going to be a good Cable. Because I'm just struggling with the idea of him ever not being kind of this grouchy, middle-aged guy.
Yeah. Well, the downside is he also played Jonah Hex.
Did he?
Yes.
I thought that was Carl Urban.
No, Carl Urban was Judge Dredd.
Oh yeah, Josh Brolin.
He's also played George W. Bush in the film W. You know, that strange Oliver Stone film about George W. Bush?
No, I don't.
So, yeah. A very checkered career, I'd say.
Oh, yeah, you need me to talk. No, I got distracted looking at his filmography.
Is this the Celebrity Heights all over again?
Oh, yeah, it was in True Grit.
It is the Celebrity Heights all over again.
It is Celebrity Heights all over again. Oh, that's right, it was in that god-awful Old Boy remake.
Yes, he was. Just to qualify what we're talking about, we have a meeting every week where all of us get together and we basically talk about what's going on and we basically bring each other up to speed. But the last meeting kind of degenerated into everyone on their mobile phones checking out Celebrity Heights.
Like, yes. Also, Josh Brolin.
Yeah.
5 foot 9.5 inches. See, it's not going to make it sense to anyone listening to this, but my God, it's such a rabbit hole.
I know. I made the mistake
of... It's one of those things you don't realise you need to know until you start looking.
And the thing is, it's like the ultimate bit of trivia, isn't it?
It is, because it's completely pointless, and also so many celebrities are shorter than you think.
Yeah, and it's that old thing, you know, he's a lot shorter in real life, isn't he? And, he's a lot taller in real life, isn't he? And you don't really realise how true that is until you start looking at Celebrity Heights. And I made the mistake after that meeting when I came home of starting to look at Celebrity Heights, and I hate you all for it.
Oh, we suckered you in.
2 hours, man. I lost track of 2 hours.
I think it's like, because heights are a thing that normal people are.
Yeah.
And, like, then you realise that celebrities are heights too. They're people just like us.
Yes. They're like Soylent Green. They're made from people.
Oh no, we've finally unleashed it. Celebrities are actually all made in like factories by pulping up humans, pouring them into molds that are then turned into celebrities. Sometimes a little bit of fish gets in there by accident, and that's how we get Steve Buscemi.
Oh, that's horrible. Although, it would explain Channing Tatum's character in Jupiter Ascending, whatever it was.
Yes, the Wachowskis were right all along.
Yes,
was it? Sean Bean is 6% B.
Channing Tatum was, what was it, half wolf, half human, half bird, half skater boy, half hairy beefcake. Oh, I've just realised, Channing Tatum, remember I was talking about Death of Hawkman, and I said Hawkman was basically hairy beefcake with wings.
Also, more importantly, Rob.
What?
Channing Tatum's name right.
Yeah, I know.
Well done.
And the reason why I think I got it right is because I'm linking him and Hawkman, and I described Hawkman as hairy beefcake with wings, which also describes Channing Tatum now. Although maybe not, because I've seen Magic Mike.
I mean, I could see Channing Tatum as Hawkman.
Yeah, I know. Magic Mike, you know, two movies, he gets his kit off a lot. Hawkman, bare-chested most of the time. And I know Channing Tatum kind of waxed all the hair off, but I'm sure we can find a convenient rug and just, you know, sellotape some rug to his chest and make him look a bit more like Hawkman.
I approve.
Anyway, shall we move on?
I mean, you can. I'm just going to linger on this image of, like, the gritty Zack Snyder DC film universe. And, like, next to Batman is just Channing Tatum with a rug strapped to his chest.
It could work. It's held in place by that hawk symbol and the straps.
Yeah. He has to keep adjusting it to stop it from slipping.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to Warner Brothers. They have announced that they're developing an animated adaptation of Watchmen, and it's going to be an actual movie, and it's going to be a faithful adaptation of the Watchmen graphic novel, executed in an animation style that mirrors the source material. Which has me confused, that last bit of the sentence. Because if it's going to be in an animation style that mirrors the source material, doesn't that just mean they're going to do it like that Realm of the Damned, where they basically have a panel from the comic and they do slight motion on it, you know, like a bit of flexing and eyebrow raise, stuff like that?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, what it sounds like they're describing is a motion comic.
Yeah.
But I assume that's not what it's going to... faithful adaptation of Watchmen is going to be kind of tricky.
Yep.
Because it is something that has often been described as unfilmable.
Well, I think they'll have better luck with it in animation than they would in live action. Because there's things you can do in animation that you just can't do in live action.
Yeah, like, they probably won't have to change the ending for live action.
No, I don't think they will.
For animation even.
Yeah, I don't think they will.
Giant space squid does not work in live action.
No, it doesn't. But we know that it does work in animation because, well, anime is...
Because anime exists.
That's what I was going to say. Anime exists and, well...
You know, I have two demands of this Watchmen film.
What?
Firstly, get Jackie Earle Haley back to voice Rorschach because he was like... the most perfect casting choice in existence.
Yes, yes.
Second thing they need to keep from the live-action movie.
Yeah?
I want Dr. Manhattan's neon elephant.
I forgot about the neon elephant.
Because that is an experience in the big cinema screen.
Yep.
Where it just wobbles on screen.
Yep.
Gently swaying in the autumn breeze.
Yep.
Like, I'm trying to imagine what actually happened in Dr. Manhattan's scenes, and to be honest, I can't remember. I was too distracted.
It's hypnotic. It's like a lava lamp. Can you imagine if it was
actually... I've got a change I want to the source material.
Oh?
You know the bit at the end where Dr. Manhattan vaporizes Rorschach?
Yeah.
I want it to come out of his dingling.
No, because I just suddenly thought, what if it was like a pendulum and Dr. Manhattan was actually a humanoid atomic clock?
Oh, we're getting very literal with the Watchmen.
I know.
Ask not for whom the Johnson tolls, it tolls for thee.
I have no words.
I don't think there's anything you can say to follow that up.
There isn't. Let's move on, because ironically enough, the next story is kind of an appropriate segue for the next story.
Oh goody, everyone. We're taking a trip over to Rob's Wrestling Corner.
Oh, no, no.
Long-time fans of the show will know what a big wrestling fan I am.
Oh, no, 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 no. Talking about Dr. Manhattan's elephant is actually the segue. Right.
And now I'm intrigued.
I knew you would be.
Is Dr. Manhattan going to do naked wrestling?
No, right.
Everyone else is going to tap out because they're too uncomfortable.
There is a... wrestler, and he's classed as one of the bad boys of wrestling, and he has wrestled all around the world, and his name is Joey Ryan, and he is...
Joey Ryan?
Yeah, he is...
It's not a wrestler name.
No, no, he's better known as the King of Dong Style, because he uses...
Okay, that's better.
Yeah, he uses his, he uses his... how do I describe this?
His floppy man.
Well, here's the thing. I've seen in a wrestling match where he's basically stood there, crotch out, and the opposing Japanese wrestler has basically grabbed onto his crotch for some reason, and Joey Ryan has basically swung his hips, and the Japanese wrestler has flipped over and landed on his back.
God bless you, Japan.
No, no, God bless you, Joey Ryan. Because he's getting his own comic called Joey Ryan, Big in Japan, indeed. And it's being created by Trez Dean and Jamie Jones. Trez Dean is a former Marvel Comics intern, and he's an unabashed pro wrestling fan. And I'm really confused about this.
I'm excited. Is he going to swing from building to building like Spider-Man?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I couldn't say. I couldn't honestly say. All I know is Joey Ryan, Big in Japan, is on Kickstarter. And how do I describe it? It's Joey Ryan.
It's a man fighting crime with his crotch is what it is.
Yes. And he looks like a 70s porn star. And he dresses like a 70s porn star.
I mean, that's just what I was assuming. Does he have the giant 70s porn moustache?
Yes. And the sunglasses. They look like aviator sunglasses, but they're not. And the side parting, slick down.
Oh, wow. I have Googled Joyra. Where's a scarf? Where's a scarf and, like, nothing else?
Yep.
Just a scarf and a pair of Speedos.
Yep. And he's perpetually oiled up.
Well, of course he... And he even... No, Rob.
Yeah.
I've got some bad news.
What?
We're going to have to fire Channing Tatum because I have found our Hawkman.
Oh my god, yeah. Actually, Joey Ryan would be perfect as Hawkman.
Just look at that fine shag rug of a chest.
I know. He would actually...
How could it be so heavy yet so glisteningly smooth?
I don't know. I don't know. Oh god, I just found a horrible, horrible image. And it kind of justifies every single thing we ever thought about wrestling. There you go.
Is it the one of him leaning on the ropes in his come hither pose? Because that is a picture.
No, no. Just.
Oh, and this is even more of a picture. I mean, that's what friendship is all about, isn't it? Having a line of men who can stand next to each other and all grab each other's crotches. Oh, except that one guy who's grabbing the guy's bum and he grabs his own crotch.
No.
There's so much in the picture.
The one on the very left, I think, is Joey Ryan. And he's about to flip all of those guys with the king of, because he's the king of dong style.
You know what? My only regret in life is that this picture is too small to make it my new desktop wallpaper.
I know. And if you get a chance, go onto YouTube and just Google Joey Ryan. You'll see him doing the flip over of people using his, using the merits that were given to him at birth. And they're trying to make
it. Joey Ryan has some kind of top Trump's card, which is like stats for girth and width.
Mojo. His mojo is infinite.
Is.
So that was your news. There's nothing else happening that's of any interest now, is there?
No, like we don't mean comics, we mean in the world.
Yep. So we're taking a break. We'll be back in a few moments with some comics and manga.
I don't know if I can do the rest of the show.
TV. There's a lot of TV. Even the internet is TV these days. And if there's too much out there to know what to watch and what not to watch, well, tune in to the Geek Show Podcast Network's very own TV show, On The Box.
Hi, my name's Kate Ashwin. I draw Widdershins at widdershinscomic.com, and you're listening to The Geek Show.
Ah, there really is nothing like a first leather-bound edition of a classic Victorian podcast. Hello, we're Literally Loitering from The Geek Show, and we cover literally all types of books, from hardbacks to paperbacks to sometimes the words within them. If any of these things interest you, why not pop in and give us a visit on Literally Loitering.
And welcome back to the show. Now we're going to be talking about what we've been reading.
Yes. I don't want to talk about anything except wrestling now. But I will force myself.
That was a man feeling his nipples, Rob. Please just mention a comic, Rob. Talk about a comic because I can't handle Joey Ryan anymore.
Okay. Dealer's choice for you to start off. Let's see how good your choices are. So we can go take a trip to Monster Town with Brave Chef Brianna from Boom Studios.
Right.
Which is one you've never heard of, isn't it?
That is one I've never heard of.
Or we can catch up with the lovely Gwenpool, or we can take a trip to the Marvel Universe and find out what's been happening with Weapon X.
Well, we've done a lot of Gwenpool that I don't really care about Weapon X, so give me some of this Brave Chef Brianna.
Okay. Right, Brave Chef Brianna is written by Sam Sykes, and it's from Boom Studios, as I've mentioned. And it's a story about a young lady and budding chef called Brianna Jakobsen, who's trying to impress her father, who is a world-famous chef and who wants to leave his cooking empire to one of his children. And the only problem is he's got 15 sons and one daughter. And Brianna, in terms of cooking, is probably the worst and the most paranoid and the most depressed of all his children, because she's been outnumbered by boys, and all of the boys are really talented at cooking, but she doesn't feel that she has the skills. But in order to be fair, her father's thrown open this competition to all of his children, who can basically create the best restaurant around. So she sets out to basically live her dream of being a chef and gaining her dad's respect and gaining the respect of her brothers and basically making a name for herself so she can feel good about herself. You know, get out that funk that she's had for all those years and everything like that. The only problem is she can't find a place anywhere that she can open as a restaurant. So she looks at Monster Town. Now, in this world, monsters and humans have formed an uneasy coexistence. There was a time when monsters used to be scary to humans, but now humans are, they've basically effectively won. The monsters are living by human rules, but they don't eat human food and stuff like that. And Brianna finds a cheap place where she can set up a little restaurant cafe type place in Monster Town, but she doesn't know the rules of Monster Town. She doesn't know that, there are certain rules and regulations, and the monsters still hold grudges against the humans for the things that humans did to them. So in this kind of environment, she's trying to create a happy and successful restaurant. And you know what? It kind of reminds me a bit of Lumberjanes and Squirrel Girl and Patsy Walker, but revolving around cooking.
Okay.
Brianna is, she's actually quite a good character in a very odd way. She has like the typical kind of foibles, the typical gripes that any human would have, being in a strange place surrounded by strange people, because she is, literally. She's in Monster Town surrounded by monsters most of the time. And for a human who never really came into contact with monsters, she's basically jumped in both feet first. And her first employee is basically a harpy who's out of work and decides that she's going to take a chance and work in this cafe restaurant along with Brianna. And so the two of them, you know, the second issue is basically the two of them, the restaurant is, it's rammed, and Brianna has to serve tables and make food at the same time. And it's kind of, it's starting to touch on some of the problems that come with running a restaurant, the, you know, equipment breaking down, having too many customers, not enough staff, all those sorts of things, dealing with kind of the late afternoon rush when everyone finishes work, the lunchtime rush, everything like that, getting food prepared, the whole thing, right? And the restaurant is successful, but only because Brianna's serving human food, right? What she doesn't know is that the city hall in the Monster Town have actually made it illegal to sell human food to monsters. So that's a problem.
That's slightly inconvenient.
Yeah, that's a problem that she doesn't know at first. She learns of it, but the only food she knows how to cook is human food. She doesn't know anything about cooking monster food, and so she started trying to learn monster food. So she has that open mind, but she doesn't actually know it. And so because the only food that she's confident in cooking is human food, that's what she's been serving, even though she knows she's not supposed to. So that's going to come back and bite her. You can see it happening.
Also, I'm stressed. I thought the point was going to be that because she's so bad at cooking human food, the monsters end up really liking it.
See, you'd think that, but she's actually not a bad chef. She's not a bad cook. The problem is that she doesn't have the self-confidence that you need to be a successful chef. And that's because all of her brothers are perpetually getting praised much more than she was. And also, her father's challenged her brothers a lot more. The way she was raised, in a sense, is like, you know, when a father has one daughter, they basically go out of the way and they become overprotective, not realizing that they're actually stifling them and causing them to have mental health issues.
Okay, yeah, I get you.
And that's basically what's happened with Brianna, is that because her dad was a little bit too overprotective and didn't really challenge her in a way that was, you know, constructive and meaningful, she's ended up with these complexes about herself. And it's interesting because these complexes manifest in kind of a black cloud that's around her. You know, that keeps telling her, this person hates you, that person doesn't like you at all, or, you know, this person's only pretending to be your friend, that sort of thing.
Right.
Yes. And I'll be honest, I'm actually quite enjoying it. The art style is very Lumberjanes. The art style is very, very Lumberjanes in a way. But it's cute, it's charming, and it's cooking. And it's not often that I have a cooking comic book that you know, that I can read about. I've read loads of cooking manga. And did I talk about that one a while ago? The one about the Yakuza chef?
I don't know, Rob. You've talked about a million different cooking manga and they all merged together in my brain.
No, this was a comic book by Anthony Bourdain.
I mean, I don't know, Rob. You talk a lot. You say a lot of words. I don't remember them all.
Anyway, Brave Chef Brianna, I'm enjoying it so far. I will keep you all updated on how it progresses and whether it's worth continuing. First two issues are a pretty good start. I wouldn't say an amazing start. I'd say solid.
Yeah, that seems to be kind of Boom's wheelhouse, these kind of cutesy adventures.
Yeah. Over to you.
Indeed. So, I have been reading some mangas.
Yeah, you got more manga than me this week.
I do. What an occurrence. So, the first one I've been reading... I mean, basically, it's been the stuff Rob can't really be bothered to read, slash the one thing that I've, like, pushed him to the ground and stolen from him because I needs it.
I wouldn't say that.
Yeah. Anyway, the first one comes from kind of the former of those two, and it is Clockwork Planet.
Just so everyone's aware, I have actually read this. It wasn't that I couldn't be bothered.
Yeah, but I mean, you've already read it, therefore you couldn't be bothered to go back through it for the show.
Oh, right, okay, yes. I will hold my hands up and admit to that.
Yeah, I caught you.
So anyway, Clockwork Planet.
Yep, Clockwork Planet. So, Clockwork Planet is about a planet. What is clockwork?
Yep, it is.
It's basically set in an alternate version of Earth, where thousands of years ago, kind of, the Earth died, and then a mysterious engineer known only as Y, which Rob, do you think in the Spanish versions, he's called K?
Possibly.
I mean, that was neither the uproarious laughter or the sigh of disappointment I was expecting.
It was kind of matter of fact, wasn't it?
It was. You completely threw me off. So anyway, Why basically revived the Earth by turning it into a giant clockwork machine.
Yeah.
And now everyone just kind of lives their lives on these gigantic gears. So the book itself follows a young boy called Naoto, who is... See, this is just like to sort of tangent. Something I find a bit weird about the book.
Hmm.
Is that in the translation, he's called a machine nerd.
Yeah.
Even though, like, apparently the Japanese version calls him a machine otaku.
Yeah.
It seems a weird change because I feel like a lot of people know what an otaku is.
Yeah. I never understood the whole, you know, changing the word otaku to geek or nerd, because enough people know what it is, and it's on the verge of becoming part of the English language anyway. Yeah, so many people use it.
Plus, like, it's only a sort of appropriate translation.
Yeah.
Because obviously otaku has a lot more negative connotations.
Yeah.
Like you see in this, Naoto is the kind of guy, he doesn't have any friends, he has no life, he just spends his head... spends his day with his head shoved into some kind of magazine about gears and stuff.
Mm.
So he's living his life, digging through piles of trash for cogs and whatnot, when one day a box crashes through his roof, and inside he finds an automaton called Ryuzu, maybe?
Ryuzu,
R-Y-U-Z-U.
Yeah, Ryuzu.
But also the Z and the U are capital, so...
Yep.
So yeah, we'll call Ryuzu, that'll do. So she's in the box, she's non-functional. So Naoto decides to repair her using his incredible sense of hearing, which basically allows to like hear the fault inside the machine.
See, I liked that actual bit because it was unusual for somebody in a manga or a comic book to just have these incredible ears.
Yeah, I really like that as an ability.
You know. Everyone's got like super sight or super strength or super speed or something like that. It's, you know, it's not that they can just happen to hear things really well.
Well, basically it's he has an intuitive understanding of how things work.
Yeah.
But I like that way of presenting it, of just he can hear what's wrong. That's the thing, it works quite well with his general otaku-ness. because it means he spends most of his time wearing these big noise-cancelling headphones.
Yeah.
Drown out the sound of, like, every single little thing.
See, I like that bit as well. It made a lot of sense as well. It was a very logical approach, I thought, with that.
Yeah, it was. So anyway, let's say Yuzu, she comes back online. She basically reveals she is one of, like, the first wave of androids that were built 1,000 years ago by Y, but she was broken, like, quite a while ago, and now she's been fixed. So she basically decides that Naoto is her new master, and then, like, licks his hand.
Okay.
See, so it's kind of like this weird... So I'm thinking about, I don't know what... Is there a name for, like, a kind of the genre where it's, like, a nerdy guy and some beautiful woman who decides to, like, become his dutiful servant?
Wish fulfillment.
That'll do.
See, yeah, you say.
Yeah, so it's basically like that. But I like that they kind of flip it on its head a bit.
Yeah.
Because basically one of the first things she does is she turns to her and just says, "You're a pervert." That's great. Because she just hates humans. She hates us for the worthless flesh bags we are.
Yep.
Like, I think there's one bit where Naoto is embarrassed and she's just like, "Oh, could it be that your self-esteem, which is worth less than the tiniest of mitochondria, has been bruised in some way?"
It's a great line. And one that I wish I thought of.
There's like another bit where she basically masquerades as a schoolgirl in Naoto's school, and like all the seniors are kind of in love with her, and she literally just like pushes them out the way. Just with her, "I don't have time for you" type thing.
Just a trail of love-struck bodies.
Exactly. And then my favourite bit is that it goes from, like, this kind of wacky comedy to suddenly, 1 month's time in Akihabara, Tokyo, the two of them reappear here as the world's most notorious terrorists.
Yep.
And I just love that mood whiplash.
Well, it kind of explains a little bit in there, doesn't it, about how they started on that journey.
Oh, yeah, like... Because that's kind of like the first half of this volume.
Hmm.
And then the second half introduces you to the Meisters Guild, who are basically the people in charge of maintaining the cogs and gears of the world. And incidentally, Meister is like the German term for someone who fixes watches, which I thought was a nice touch.
Yep.
So basically, the girl in charge of that, Marie Brage... Breguet, make of that what you want. I'm not saying it again.
Breguet.
Whatevs. She's like the head of the Meisters Guild, and she uncovers this big government conspiracy to deliberately cover up a seemingly irreparable fault. I think it's Kyoto? Somewhere in Japan.
Yeah.
The bit where all of this is taking place is going to collapse in the near future, and that kind of clues you in as to why these characters are going to become terrorists.
Isn't it that the government and the military are going to purge that area, killing millions of people in the process?
Yes, basically. And they're going to frame the Meisters for doing it. So it's clearly setting up that she's going to meet Naoto and Ryuzu, and they're probably going to go against the government to save the... possibly even save the world.
Possibly. So, opinions on Clockwork Planet, then, after the first volume?
I mostly like it. Like, I like the comedy, and I think it's an interesting twist on the steampunk idea.
Hmm.
But I think the main problem I have is Marie.
Yeah.
Who, you know, the whole young girl in charge of a big, serious adult organization, and she wears the tiny short shorts, and oh god, she's a lolly rob, and I don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't like it, and it makes me feel dirty, and I want to shower it all away.
See, I didn't mind it too much, but then again, I basically ignored that aspect of it. And, you know, I'm kind of desensitized to that sort of thing a little bit. I wouldn't say I was totally desensitized, but, you know, I ignored it for Clockwork Planet. And I didn't mind Marie as much. What got me was that was exactly what you said. It wouldn't be a little child in charge of the Meisters Guild. It would be a full-grown adult with experience. It would basically be steampunk Dumbledore.
Yeah, and like the problem is, it's because she's a little child, and like it's the bit in the back of my mind that's always aware. It's basically saying, look, this child is doing an adult's job, so it's basically like she's an adult. So it's okay to have a crush on her. No, Japan. No, it's not. I don't like it. Stop having her sit on the chair in a suggestive pose. It makes me very uncomfortable.
At least Ryuzu was an interesting character to a degree.
Yeah, I like that it's not the... not to criticise it, but kind of the Oh My Goddess-esque... Oh, I'm all lovely and sweet, and I love you, Master. And you teenage boy who's reading this, you could be just like this.
The other thing I like as well, though, is the fact that Naoto is completely uninterested in Marie, as in completely.
Because I
can't remember how they met in this volume.
No, this volume ends with the two of them meeting.
Oh, right, yeah, okay, yeah.
Kind of literally, what you mean, they walk past Marie, and she kind of does like the double take thing. Because she's been looking for Ryuzu.
Ah, yes.
So, but I do kind of like the basically Naoto is in love with machines and he's a filthy, dirty pervert.
Because he's in love with machines, with all that entails.
He loves the little spinning wheels. I like that at least they're putting a lampshade on that.
Yeah. He loves to grind those gears.
Oh, also, fun fact for everyone, this is something I've already told you.
Yeah.
But basically, because I'm not that familiar with the manga world still, I basically had to Google lolly to make sure it was the term I thought it was.
Yeah.
Literally, the first result on Google is a thing saying, you should report all instances of child abuse. And that made me so very sad inside.
And also scared.
Yeah. Like, I feel like I want to just, like, write email, dear Google, it's just research for a podcast. Please note that I didn't click on the images tab.
When he told me, I almost fell off my chair laughing.
You did.
And it wasn't just the fact that you told me. It was the hesitant way you told me as well.
It is, because the shame, Rob.
We need a shame bell.
It's like you know when you see a police officer.
Yeah.
And you know you haven't done anything wrong. But there's still that irrational fear that they're going to arrest you for something.
Yeah. There is always that irrational fear. You start having a guilty conscience.
I do. This manga gives me a guilty conscience. I want to give it back to you soon, Bob.
Well, do you know...
I worry about the fact that it's in my house.
It's funny we talk about the police and the reactions people have. There's a guy who came over to the UK perfectly legally, and he was studying here, right? And he was in a park with his friends. This was down in London. He was in a park in London with his friends during lunchtime, because he was studying at the university, and the police came steaming through the park looking for... They were chasing somebody, and this lad and his friends saw the police running towards them and started running away. So naturally, the police are thinking, they're running away from us, they must have done something wrong, while these lads were all thinking, the police are running over here, they're going to beat us up. So when the police eventually collared them, they basically found out that they were students. They took the passports and arrested them for whatever reason. Then a short time later, they all got deported.
But you made it back here eventually.
No, it wasn't me, thankfully.
But yeah, you should not run from the police.
No, just wait there for them to catch up to you and offer them a donut.
Yeah, and just hope they don't look at all the hideous hentai in your bag.
If you're carrying hentai in your bag, there's something seriously wrong with you.
Do you know what I want now?
What?
Just an image of Ryuzu saying, you're a pervert. Just so I can use that like message boards or something.
No, no, no. You want that joy, that wrestling image from earlier with a picture of Ryuzu.
Yes.
It's a combination image. Anyway.
Maybe they can meet in the Joey Ryan comic.
Oh my God. The Joey Ryan Clockwork Planet crossover. Joey, these gears need more grease. Please rub yourself against them. Grind those gears, Joey. Grind them good.
And that's how Kyoto was saved.
Oh, this is all going horribly wrong.
Joey, we've saved the city. You can stop now. You're not going to stop, are you, Joey?
No, Joey He's Ryan never stops. I stop for no man.
God, we've created a whole new subgenre, haven't we?
Yes, we...
Joey Ryan rubbing his oily body on gears.
Oh, no, on anything. Can you imagine Joey Ryan versus Superman? Superman's going, no, 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 just stay where you are. Just stay where you are. And Joey Ryan just gyrating towards Kal-El, going, "You can't fight it, Kal-El. I know your weakness."
Well, Batman sobs because he doesn't have a contingency plan for this level of sexiness.
Yeah, exactly. You got, you got the Martian Manhunter saying, "Bruce, surely you must have something in your utility vault for this situation." And Wonder Woman's already passed out from the dazzling sexiness.
Blood streaming down her nose.
Yes. It's all gone wrong.
No, actually, Martian Manhunter won't be saying, "Martian Manhunter and Hawkman are like Joey Ryan's posse."
Oh, yes.
Shirtless dudes.
Oh, they've switched sides. They've switched sides. Which is how he's managed to infiltrate the Watchtower. And there you have it. Joey Ryan conquers the DC Universe.
I think we need to go back to you before this gets any stranger.
Yes. So, I have been reading a very interesting manga. And this one is another thick manga.
Oh, we shouldn't have said thick so soon. We're not far enough away from Joey Ryan to be using words like that.
Oh, sorry. This is another... See, I'm going through adjectives in my head. I'm just listing them all and going, no, can't use that, can't use that, can't use that, can't use that.
Bulky. What about bulky?
No, can't use that, can't use hefty, can't use huge, can't use anything. This is another manga of substance. It's 563 pages. No, can't say that either. And because I did, you know, we featured Dororo, the Tezuka Complete Omnibus Edition of Dororo recently. And this is not as, you know, it's not as more adjectives processing.
I mean, Rob.
Yeah.
It's not about how long your manga is, but what you do with it.
Please don't.
I can't. Joey Ryan has sexily gyrated his way through this entire show.
So, this is a manga by Kazuto Tatsuta called Itchy F. And so, I can't blow up.
Oh, God, what are we doing? We're making sexy jokes about manga about the Fukushima power plant.
I know, I can't
We're
help
it. We're going to hell, Rob.
Yeah.
We're going to go to hell for this one.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, it's a manga about, obviously, as Andrew said, the Fukushima power plant over in Japan. And it has the tagline, "A worker's graphic memoir of the Fukushima nuclear power plant." And this is set after the earthquake, the tidal wave, and the meltdown at Fukushima. And Kazuto Tatsuta is a person who has worked on the nuclear power plant. He's actually a volunteer. Technically volunteers, they get paid to go in there, but they're basically people who've put themselves forward to go in and help with the clear-up and things like that. So they're risking their lives to basically help clear up the place where this meltdown happened. There's certain areas where they can't go in because the radiation is just too high and too dangerous. But around the edges, around the outskirts, they can basically clear things up, but they still have to wear protective gear. And this is... Kazuto Tatsuta obviously is a pen name. It's not his real name. And some of the names in this and some of the equipment names and what they do have been changed just to maintain privacy, secrecy, that sort of thing, right? But it is an accurate, in fact, a remarkably accurate description of the processes, the practices, the lives even that have been affected by Fukushima after the meltdown. You know, you've got these deserted towns in the area where nothing is. You've got animals just kind of roaming around. It's like a very genteel Stalker. You remember Stalker? Shadow of Chernobyl?
Oh, right, the game.
Yeah. It's like a very genteel version of Stalker and like a very organized version of Stalker. You don't get these massive mutated monsters or anything like that. You know, they're driving through this... they've just passed a checkpoint to enter this restricted area and they're driving along towards where they're going to be working that day and they're stopped in the middle of the road by a cow, which, to all intents and purposes, would be a fairly normal thing in a countryside area. The only difference is that this area is radioactive. Not as radioactive as closer to the power plant, but it's still a restricted area because of the higher levels of radiation than normal. So it's this idiosyncrasy of having like these beautiful fields of flowers, but you can't actually, you know, you can't actually go there to visit on a regular basis because it's restricted completely because of the higher than normal levels of radiation. These deserted towns, these empty football stadiums where they've got pictures of their team winning the championship on, you know, on banners all over the stadium, but no one's there. It's completely silent now.
Okay, I thought that's interesting. Cause I think, I mean, when you say something like with nuclear fallout, you imagine Chernobyl or Fallout.
Yeah.
Which is this really kind of like barren wasteland.
Yeah.
But no, but I guess for all intents and purposes, it's just like an abandoned town, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing about this, it's 563 pages long, but it deals a lot with the actual practices and processes that you go through when you're working in this kind of hazardous environment, and it is extremely hazardous. It's what they're doing is probably one of the most dangerous jobs on the planet, and getting an insight into the kind of work that goes on at Fukushima, the kind of work that just these normal people are doing. These people aren't trained specially for this. They haven't gone through years and years of training. They basically said, this has happened and everyone needs to get together in order for us to fix it. So I'm going to put myself forward for it. These people aren't heroes. They're just normal people. And that's one of the beautiful things about this manga, is that everybody in it is basically a normal person. There is no, you know, clumsy otaku who becomes the leader of a harem. There is no alien from outer space who becomes the ultimate Boy Scout. You know, there's no kid who saw his parents murdered in front of him and ends up becoming a billionaire. There's nothing like that. It's just a bunch of normal people trying to get a job done and going through all of the rules, the regulations, the checks, everything like that. And just basically trying to do the right thing, you know, and I like it. I actually really like it. It's a slice of life, effectively. It is a slice of life, but it's a slice of life set in one of the most dangerous places on the planet.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting.
You know, it's not for everybody. I will admit, it isn't for everybody because it is very, very slow paced. You do get certain conflicts and things like that, but they're very, very minor and very, very staid, very genteel. As I said, and I don't know, it's weird because I've been getting this weird sensation from reading it. It's not that it makes me feel happy, it just meant that it makes me feel like, you know, there are people worth saving. You know, there are people who actually have something decent and noble about them in the world. You know that feeling you get after you watch DIY SOS, the big build.
The world isn't entirely a kaleidoscope of horrors.
Yeah, there are good people out there who are doing good things, and they're just normal, everyday people who are doing good things, and this is one of those manga that's about them, and that's one of the reasons I love it.
Okay.
So, well done, Kazuto Tatsuta, for doing this. Well done to Kodansha for publishing this in the UK. It is well worth a look if you like something that's going to make you think and something that's going to make you view things in a different way.
So, over to me.
Yes, I think I've managed to calm things down from the Joey Ryan.
You have. You've brought things back to the serious times.
Yes, I have.
But anyway, do you know who else was an ordinary person who was incredibly brave?
Yes.
Kind of desperately bolting on a segue. Florence Nightingale.
Well, she was. In reality, but how is she in manga?
Well, she's pretty much incredibly brave. Because I've been reading Volume 2, which is in fact the final volume, of The Black Museum, The Ghost and the Lady.
And you were waiting for this patiently.
I was, because I very much enjoyed the first volume. So this second volume, it continues on with the plot of Florence Nightingale and the ghost of the Grey Man of Drury Lane Theatre, who is following her around in the hopes that when she reaches kind of the point, her lowest moment, kind of when she gives up all hope, he'll kill her, and that will make her like the leading lady in the tragedies of writing in his head.
Yeah.
So this volume follows the two of them in Crimea, trying to fix the hospitals there, while also trying to foil the plots of Chief Medical Examiner John Hall, who has a ghost of his own, which is Chevalier Dayon, who, fun fact, turns out is a real historical figure as well.
You didn't know this?
No, I didn't. Because, I mean...
If I remember right...
Honest, I was, like, berate the book for being, like, for having a villain who's kind of transgender, but seemingly for no reason, only to learn, actually, that's because they're based on, like, the most famous transgender person in history.
Yeah, wasn't he, she, like a diplomat spy type thing?
Yeah, like a diplomat, a spy, and also a world-renowned duelist.
Yeah.
So yeah, because that's the cool thing about Black Museum, is for being a book about a ghost who fights, like, the scary monsters that live on people's backs.
Yeah.
It's actually very historically accurate. like all the characters are based off of real people.
Yeah.
Like, even... There's, like, this little kid who follows Florence around called Bob Robinson.
Yep.
Turns out he was a real person.
Yeah.
And, like, there's Alexis Sawyer? I think it's Sawyer. Alexis Sawyer, who's, like, this ridiculous, over-the-top French chef. He's, like, I mean, I was going to say, like, how stereotypical that the French chef comes to, oh, no, actual person who actually came and helped out in Crimea.
Yep.
So yeah, it's cool, because it's basically just like a really well-researched biography of Florence Nightingale.
Fantastic.
With ghost fights.
Do you want to know what the Chevalier Dayon's full name was?
Oh no, it's in the back of the book. So, get ready for this, everyone. Chevalier Charles Genevieve Louis Auguste André Timothée Dayon de Beaumont.
Yep.
That's a name.
So, just Chevalier Dayon is fine. You know, that's a name that put its teeth in before it left the house.
Yes, it did. It ate its Weetabix and grew up big and strong.
So, anyway, Black Museum, Ghost and Lady.
Yeah, I like this even more than the first volume.
Okay.
Because I think the complaint I had of the first volume was parts of it got a little bit repetitive.
Yeah.
With basically Greybeard, so have you fallen into despair yet? Can I kill you yet? No. Okay. And this tones a lot of that down. And especially, like, because he's got this little catchphrase he said, like, all through the first volume, to the point that it got a bit tiring. And I like that he doesn't really say it here until right at the end, where you basically get this cool moment of him, like, basically in the final fight against Dayon, he's been cut to literally ribbons. And he just, like, does this really self-assured, well, you've left me no choice but to give you the opportunity to kill me. Therefore, I challenge you to a duel.
Yeah.
So it comes across a lot more badass when he's not being saying it like every other panel.
This is true.
And also, it kind of reveals the mystery behind the overall style. Well, yeah. The frame of the story.
Yeah.
Which is basically the ghost telling this to the curator of the museum to explain why there are two bullets that have collided together. And I mean, because to spoil the end a little bit, because it's not really a spoiler, because also it's in history. It turns out he's basically telling all this to the curator so that he can borrow it.
Okay.
And it makes a lot of sense when you realize that a lot of Grey's arc has been kind of, he's obsessed with the four somethings of marriage. So there's something borrowed, something blue.
Yeah, something old, something new.
Yeah, something old, something new. And it turns out he wants the bullet as is something borrowed so that he can go, like, kind of propose to Florence on her deathbed.
Okay.
And you've got this lovely moment at the end, like her basically going off to heaven, but Grey doesn't go with her because he's still got too many plays to see. She says, I'll wait for you. And it's Florence Goddard Nightingale. So if she says she's going to do something, she's damn well going to do something.
Yeah. But can you imagine the afterwards, after Grey has watched all the plays and he goes to meet Florence, and Florence is there with a cold dinner on the table, tapping her feet and just, you know, arms folded, stern look on her face, going, what time do you call this then?
That is enough to make me want a sequel. Just Florence and Grey, ghost married.
That might actually work, actually. as a comics. Someone might do that.
Yeah, well, who knows? Because apparently in the back of this it says there's at least going to be one more Black Museum.
One more? Sorry?
Because basically at the back, Kazuhiro Fujita says that he's definitely planning to do another Black Museum after this. So there's at least going to be one more. Get on it, Kazuhiro. Want my ghost man? The married afterlife.
I'm confused.
Basically, what I'm saying is that I want a sequel series that's...
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, I get you. So you want the sequel series to the Black Museum, which is basically Florence Nightingale and Grey in like five years' time when they're married in the afterlife.
Palling about, having fun.
Yeah. Or they could go down the Incredibles route, the Supernaturals.
Maybe, but they're not because it's going to be completely unrelated. That's how Black Museum rolls.
Yep. What if it's Springgold? Was Springgold ever released?
Well, what? No. It says after the writer's going to write another one.
Oh, right. It's a totally new one.
That writes the words.
Yeah. It's a totally new Black Museum then.
Yeah.
Ah,
I don't think Springgold's actually been released here.
I don't think it has either. I think it's still to come. I hope they do release it as well.
Well, I guess it might depend on how well Ghost and the Lady sells.
Cool. Right. So I think that's us for today, isn't it?
Oh, yep. Seems like it is.
Yeah. So we will see you all next time on 4Panel. We will shake off the essence of Joey Ryan. We'll wash it off carefully.
No, Rob. No matter how much you wash, you can never get the essence of Joey Ryan out.
No. It depends. You know, Vosine for the hair and bleach for the body. It could work. We don't know.
I'm just trying to imagine what he smells like now.
I don't want to know.
Definitely musky.
Knowing what musk means now, I'm not even going to comment.
Or maybe he has that smell. You know when you go to a seedy bar?
Yeah.
Has that seedy bar smell that you've no idea where it comes from? Maybe he's just the physical embodiment of that.
Possibly. It's very possible.
Joey Ryan probably smells how Johnny Depp looks.
I'm not even going to comment on that. All I'm going to say is, as I mentioned earlier, all of our shows are available on iTunes, YouTube, Mixcloud, and very soon Audioboom, so check them out. If you're listening on iTunes, then leave us a rating, leave us a review. It does help us improve. And if you're listening on Audioboom, then subscribe. So, yeah, that's it. That's what we're done. We're leaving. I can't handle any more talk about Joey Ryan.
Well, thanks for listening, and God bless you for doing it.